Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. On this episode, it is your treat and mine that I am joined by Joe Rosenseal. Hello, Joe. How are you?
Hello, Scott. It is my treat to talk to you, so it's a double treat.
Oh, look at that. It's the old Dutch treat. That's not what Dutch treat means. That means you split it in half, and it's probably politically incorrect to say that anymore. So Dutch listeners, don't write it. It's fine. You're lovely. Enjoy your windmills and your tulips. Those are Dutch things, right? I'm going to change the subject. Joe, before we start talking about Star Trek, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
I am a visual effects compositing supervisor for film and mostly television these days. And I sometimes write some technology stuff for Jason Snell over at Six Colors, and that about summarizes it. Oh, and on the Incomparable Network, my friend Dan Sturm and I do a podcast about movies. It's a little on the irreverent side, called Defocused. So if you are interested in that, you can check that out. But that would be for, I guess, random people who are coming into the sixth or seventh episode of me doing this show, and don't have any desire to click away yet. So yeah,
well, you never know. I don't know how people find these shows, so who knows. But yes, Joe has been on a number of times, but this is his first Enterprise episode that we get to talk about, so I can ask him all about his opinions of Enterprise before we delve in to talk about Terra Nova, which is a season one episode of Enterprise, the sixth episode of this fine show on the screens in October 2001. That's not how you say that. 2001. That's how you say that. Oh, and I just closed the browser that had the summary. Oh boy, this is all going so well, Joe. But before I open this browser window, actually, as I open this browser window, what are your thoughts about Enterprise in general? Were you a big fan? Not a big fan? Somewhere in between?
This came out my freshman year of college, and so I was to a point where I had seen a lot of Star Trek, and I was kind of demanding, I think, a little more out of the show than perhaps it was capable of giving me, because I had seen various things by Rick Berman and Brandon Braga throughout this whole time period, where we kind of had looped back and rehashed some stuff with, you know, Deep Space Nine rehashing some things from TNG or TOS, and Voyager the same, and then now Enterprise kind of rehashing from all of those on occasion. And you had the sort of production demands of trying to make the, what was it, 22 or 24 episode series, but with more expensive constraints on, like, we would like to have this be in HD. This is going to be the first Star Trek that's 16:9. So it had its ups and downs in terms of my expectations, and I would say that the first two seasons are pretty down for me. But I did watch a considerable portion of both of them. Although Terra Nova was only a lingering impression in my mind before I rewatched it for this.
Oh, Terra Nova. Mm-hmm. Yes, I will. Marisa, my wife, and I although we've kind of stalled, we've decided to watch Enterprise from start to finish. And I believe we have stalled in Terra Nova because I went to watch this again, and Amazon Prime told me, oh, do you want to resume this like 20 minutes in? So I think this is where we stopped. Now, I was doing my research, my thorough research, as I do on each episode that we discuss on Random Trek, which is I go to Memory Alpha and read the entry because I'm a professional, people. And I was surprised to learn that Brandon Braga thinks that this is the worst episode of Star Trek Enterprise that he has been involved in. And I tell you that with surprise, Joe, because the previous episode of Random Trek, I discussed with John Maltz, These Are the Voyages, which is the finale of Enterprise, also written by the same two gentlemen, which I think might be the worst episode of Star Trek ever, period. And I think that this episode, Terra Nova, is far better than These Are the Voyages. Now, do you have any vague memories of the finale of Star Trek Enterprise?
No, I mostly blotted it out. The stuff that I mainly remember is there were some good episodes in the Zindi arc in season three, and there's some good stuff when they changed up stuff. They changed up the producers and everything in season four, and so you got these like mini arcs where they would do like 3 to 4 episode bursts of a little thing happening. But each episode was still like a kind of a mostly standalone episode. So that became a little more interesting in those latter seasons. But that finale, I don't have any need to revisit, although I guess I should to just be like, that's why I hated it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I will, people who want to hear my opinion of it can listen to the previous episode of Random Trek. But I will just say that I am not someone who loves Enterprise, but I hate what that episode did for Enterprise.
Yeah.
So that it is no good. And it deserved better. In fact, I disliked it so much that I watched the previous two episodes, which Mandy Cota, who was the showrunner for season four, considers the actual series finale. Just to see how much, if it was any better. And guess what? It would have been a much better series finale, but that's neither here nor there. We are still early in Enterprise days. We're full of hope and optimism with a new Star Trek is on. This is the sixth episode. We're excited. This episode has one of these, it's kind of like a prototypical episode of Star Trek. It has a high sci-fi concept. It's got a lot of people talking to each other. It's got some questionable leaps that we can talk about. And so it's all there to grasp defeat from the jaws of victory. So we will find out how we feel about this episode as we discuss it. Also, fun fact, the first directorial debut, well, Enterprise directorial debut of your friend and mine, although not actually my friend, and maybe he is Joe's friend, I don't know, LeVar Burton. So hooray for LeVar Burton.
Yeah, that would be something if he was my friend. I would appreciate that. He's done better episodes of Star Trek, I will say that. I don't know how he feels about it.
Well, he probably, I'm going to guess that he doesn't get many questions about Terra Nova when people are talking about his directorial portfolio. But I could be wrong. There might be a lot of Terranovans out there who are super cool. So basically, this is the lost colony of Roanoke, only it's in space, and they find people, and we got to figure out how to deal with them. That's my pitch for this episode. And so the Enterprise is headed towards, and this is also a weird trailer, a weird teaser. They're headed towards the planet, and Ensign Mayweather, who is one of these characters that I often forget exists, is very excited to visit because he's been fascinated since a kid. He was a kid, and Captain Archer's like, yep. And that's the teaser.
Yeah, that was probably one of the least exciting teasers. Like, the Star Trek teasers are really supposed to, like, hook you into the show. Sometimes you start in media res with something happening, and you don't know what it is, and they'll explain it after you do the exciting opening titles, although, you know, exciting opening titles kind of varies here with Star Trek Enterprise. But with this one, it's just like, yeah, I'm so excited to see this lost colony that I remember since I was a kid. I'm excited too. What do you think we'll find? I don't know. We'll find out in 3 hours. And that's the opening. It's like, are you guys trying to get me to like not change the channel? Because I would like to just like be more engaged with this content.
It was very weird. I feel like they could have. So one of the scenes that I thought was the best scene in this episode we're getting to is when they beam down and they find the abandoned colony. Because it looks. So one of the nice things about Enterprise is that it's before the original series. So it looks almost contemporary, right? It's kind of very familiar. The Enterprise, although it is a warp vessel and a spaceship, I know, it looks like a fighter jet, only bigger, right? So it's kind of like, okay, I get it. And it feels creepy. And I would have started there, but they didn't for whatever reason. I don't know. And they don't even get there after the teaser, because then we have to go to Captain Archer's lunchroom, which... I have noticed in a previous episode of Random Trek has a ridiculously small table. I don't understand why, but it does. I guess, you know, there's a lot of space constraints on the Enterprise. They couldn't build it that big. It's a silly little table. But around that silly little table, T'Pol, Archer, and Trip are eating something. It doesn't matter. And they're talking about Terra Nova. And I also enjoyed this scene because Trip is like grilling T'Pol about all these famous human explorers. And she's like, I don't know who any of these people are. And Trip is like, that's weird. All Earth children had to learn about Vulcan explorers. And she's like, name one. And he's like, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah. As for what you were saying with that set feeling small, all the Enterprise sets kind of feel small. Was it Herman Zimmerman who did all the sets for the modern Star Treks up to that point? They were trying to make it feel like a submarine. You see Archer when he's in his Reading room, always ducking underneath those buttresses or struts that are there. And same goes for like the table. They wanted it to feel like it's a submarine where everyone's like crammed in close. Although I don't think that necessarily ever really came across because everything kind of just looked like painted plywood or MDF. So yeah, whatever.
Well, and I think that kind of sums up Enterprise in that's a decision that makes sense, but then it is the first Enterprise first Star Trek, I should say, as you mentioned, that is in HD and in widescreen. So they have all this to play with, and then they decide, let's make it just a really tight, cramped thing, and just not play with the space at all.
Yeah. Okay. How many times can we get Jonathan Archer to nearly hit his head?
People will love it.
I know.
Nobody loves it. Nobody liked it when Scotty hit his head. So
the back of his hand. There you go.
Mm-hmm. So we find out a little bit about Terra Nova. It's a great experiment. They went off to, you know, do whatever it is colonists do, and they established their colony, and then Earth said, hey, you're doing so well, let's send some more colonists. And they said, no, thank you. Then all contact was lost, and it's a great mystery. So they're here. It's very exciting to figure out what's going to happen. And they beam down to the colony, and this is where the scene, which I thought was pretty good, where they don't beam down. They take their little shuttle pod, which is important. And they walk through this little set, which I thought was cool. I like the little details of like the bike was there, and I was like, oh, it's like an abandoned thing. It's a mystery. It's exciting. And T'Pol's like, why didn't they just take their ship home? And we find out that they turned their ship into their shelter, so they couldn't take their ship home. And also, there's radiation. So that something bad has happened and everybody is gone. Now, here, Joe, I am not an expert on exploring unknown territory, but there are four of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they go down, and Archer says, okay, everybody just split up at random and just walk around and see what happens. And so Archer and T'Pol stay together, but Mayweather and I always forget his name, Reed, go off separately. And Reed is like their security guy, and he seems like, it's fine, I'll just traipse around by myself. It seems like a weird decision, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, it happens a lot in Star Trek, but it happens in an environment where they can't just like beam out. It happens because they have to like scramble back to a shuttle pod if something were to occur, that would be an emergency. But as you know, from being an incredible D&D, you know, dungeon master, like why would you have four people split the party? Yeah, it's just like it's ridiculous, but you have to get the story to move forward. So
that is, it is a TV show, so that's what it really boils down to, because you need to have some, if they just beam down and they're like, nope, nobody's here, let's go, it would be a boring episode of Star Trek. Some might argue that it is
still
a boring episode of Star Trek when they still find people, but we'll get to that. So Reed sees someone rustling in the leaves, and he runs after them, and someone shoots at him, and he gets taken hostage, and it seems strange to me that they don't immediately think, oh, these are humans.
No. He doesn't even immediately get taken hostage. They chase to the cave. And so at this point, they know they're living bipedal people there, all they have to go on is that humans were here, so it would be a logical assumption that they're probably human, but nobody makes that assumption. And then They go into the caves.
They go in the caves. Yeah, I forget.
With, again, splitting the party with Reed and Archer going in and then crawling into like a little slot that's in the floor so that they can get to the other part of the cave where they can be more easily separated so that Reed can be left behind when he gets shot. And
yeah, it's like,
they see all the implements and stuff, like the knife that he picks up that was a human knife. They shine a flashlight right in their eyes and they're people with mud on their faces. And yet they still, when they scramble back out of there and get to the shuttle pod, T'Pol says that, you know, those weren't aliens. They're human. And it's just like that. I know that's supposed to be like a dun 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 moment, but it wasn't, because we were all just watching the episode and they were clearly like people.
they're humans. Also, my problem with that is to T'Pol, they are aliens because she's a Vulcan and they're humans. But anyway, that's, you know, nitpicking. Yeah. I will say once again, there are, I'm going to give you a spoiler, Joe. I don't think this episode is horrible. It's not particularly good, but I don't think it's horrible. But there are some things that I thought were very good. And I did like that scene where they flash their flashlights up and those people are peering at them from above, because I just thought it looked creepy. And but I do think maybe for a second you think, ah, aliens. But then you think, oh, no, we're on a human colony. We're looking for lost colonists. These are them.
Yeah. It's just one of the situations where I agree. This is not like the worst episode I've ever seen. Not to disagree with Brandon Braga about this, but it is definitely something where I don't think it lived up to the potential of what this could have been. In either terms of the teleplay or the execution, like the stuff that they have going on here, things just are paced out so weird and revelations come way too late for various things. And the fact that they're human is one of those revelations that makes it kind of disappointing to watch them try to figure it out. Because you want your main characters to be smart. And so
it's true.
Figuring it out and then waiting for them to figure it out is not exciting.
No, and I guess they couldn't, they didn't scan, because later in the episode they scan for the biosigns and they find out exactly how many people are down there. And I feel why didn't you just do that immediately and find out, gee, there are these 58 or whatever human biosigns down there. They don't, and I don't understand why. I feel like that's the first thing you do before you take your little shuttle pod down to this planet. Scan the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Why not? You might not find anything, but maybe you'll find something.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm not a Starfleet captain, so, you know, who am I to judge Captain Archer's decisions, although he doesn't really make a lot of good decisions. But Reed is captured. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. They can't transport him out because he's too deep down there, so they need to go back down and get him. But the geology is unstable, so that's important later, too. And we find out that in a vaguely good scene, I forget who says this, maybe Hoshi says, how are they living down there? And Dr. Phlox is like, plenty of people live underground and eat stuff, man.
Yeah, I love Dr. Phlox. I think he's one of the best things about Enterprise. I don't feel like a lot of the characters are ever really written very well or served well by the writers. But Phlox always, I think, has an opportunity to shine, and Billingsley does a good job every time. And this is an episode where he gets to seem both knowledgeable and compassionate. And so I enjoy that, that he has that nice perspective.
Yes. And there is a moment in particular that's coming up in a little bit that I think is great for Dr. Phlox, and we'll get there. And I agree with you. He is, in a show that I don't particularly like, and once again, it's a Star Trek show, so I do like it. Enterprise superfans, don't send me emails. My main problem with Enterprise and people, I've been doing a lot of random Trek Enterprises, so feel free to skip ahead in like 30 seconds if you've heard me say this. Captain Archer is a grumpy pants for no particular reason, and a huge percentage of the cast, I don't remember their characters, which is a bad sign. But I do like T'Pol, and I do like Dr. Phlox. So hooray for them. And I like Porthos. He's so cute. But I don't think he's in this episode. So this gets 0 points for Porthos.
0 Porthos points.
Yeah, that's very sad. So now the Dr. Phlox and Captain Archer go back down to, I was going to say go downstairs, go to the... to make this episode even less exciting. Yeah, let's just go downstairs and see what's happening in the basement. To figure out what's happening, and he asks T'Pol and, or I guess he orders T'Pol and Tucker to continue looking at the geology, and I guess they got some transmissions from the old transmitter tower, so he's asking Mayweather and Hoshi to look at that. So many threads are happening. Ooh, it's exciting. Not so exciting.
No.
I don't know. So they go down there and they talk to these aliens who are humans, and they agree to. So they seem kind of nice, really. And they take them to Malcolm. And here's my other problem with this episode, Joe, because only 70 years has passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they are speaking English pretty well, except. They have some strange, like they say, like what we track together, which I get, but then they call like the Enterprise, like a sky ship. And I'm kind of like, come on, you would remember spaceships. It's only been 70 years and your mother was like a 5-year old. Like she would remember the word spaceship.
Yeah. I understood what they were going for. Again, I think it's the execution that lets it down because, it's sort of like in Miri, in the Star Trek episode from the original series where it's just kids that are left because all the people mm-hmm. who grow older get the disease and die. So they all have their weird mm-hmm. kind of way of speaking. And it's sort of like that here. And it's just not charming or particularly fun to listen to. And you can tell the actors who are trying to be very emotional during these moments. I would say especially what's her name? Nadette. That she has to struggle with some of the stuff that she's forced to say in the script about the overworld and the stuff and diggers and
the poison rain and the diggers. The poison rain I get because a little kid may not understand radiation, but the rest of them kind of like, come on.
Yeah. And the shale means lying and it's like, okay, we get it. They live underground. But come on.
Yeah. And why would they suddenly adopt shale meaning lying? Are we to believe that the kids were advanced geologists but they don't remember starships, so they remember, oh look, it's shale. And shale is not trustworthy.
No.
I mean, I get, once again, I know what they're going for, but it just doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
But this is where Dr. Phlox is like, hey, we can help you out, and by the way, Nadette, you have lung cancer, and I can fix it.
Yeah.
Dr. Archer's like, so you help us and we'll help you. So, we'll treat your lung cancer, Nadette, but you have to come up to my ship. And the, Nadette's son, whose name I don't remember, but he's like the guy in charge, says, we'll keep Malcolm, and you can take Nadette. And Archer's like, not at all. We have to take him. He needs treatment. And immediately Dr. Phlox says, he'll be fine for 2 hours.
I like that.
I like that a lot.
Because in my notes, like, I know you said Archer is so unlikable and stuff earlier. What I have written down here is Archer is so pissy in this exclamation mark in my notes. It was just kind of nice to see him like settle him down because he's trying to get them to trust him and all this stuff, and so you do this sort of exchange so that way they don't think you're just like leaving with their leaders. And so it works fine, and when you consider the fact that it's just the two of them going up and they're only leaving Malcolm, who they have no idea what his worth is, behind, it seems like a really a lot more trustworthy, they have a lot more trust in them than I think the script seems to indicate. But yeah, that actor, Jimin, is Eric Avari, who's like in 1,000 things. He's a terrific character actor, but he's struggling.
He's that guy.
Yeah, he's struggling with this dialogue too, which is unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing their best to make it sound believable, but it is, it's no fault of their own. They're doing fine work. And I do feel as though they don't trust these people. But he wants his mother not to die. So off they go. They agree, if Reed stays there, and Reed says it's fine, to go up and see the ship and get her lung cancer cured, which is good. And then we find out, oh no, because there's a little mystery about, well, where did this radiation come from? Maybe the second colonists attacked. That's what the first colonists think, that the humans came and attacked them. So they don't actually think they're humans anymore, or they don't think they're humans, period. They are Terranovans, and the humans have tried to steal their land, and so they had to go underground. That's what they think happened.
Mm-hmm.
But Archer and crew don't know what happened, so they're investigating. Turns out it was an asteroid that hit the planet a few years after the folks landed and contaminated the atmosphere, which is a big bummer for everybody. And Tucker basically says that bummer.
Yeah. Oh, and it's also weird that they have such a distrust of humans over this period of time and all walk around carrying semi-automatic weapons and have working ammunition. It's been 70 years. But even like the youngest of them harbors this fear and, you know, determined hatred that the humans will gut the Novans. And it seems like there's no way they would have even believed in that for this period of time leading up to this, because they just live in caves. Like they don't see other humans. There's no ships. There's nothing going on. So what would support such paranoia over time?
I feel like one of the things they could have done, and once again, this is one of my least favorite kind of Star Trek episodes. I'm not mad at it. I'm just disappointed because I think one of the things they could have, it's an interesting concept. And I think one of the things they could have done is, to what you're saying, like the younger Terranovans could have, one assumes, lives with the humans as kind of a boogeyman that their parents tell them about, oh, the humans tried to wipe us out. And maybe they don't think the humans actually exist. And then Archer appears and they think, well, they're not humans. They're just Terranovans or whatever. And there could be some distrust of, you know, the myths that they have heard. But we don't hear any of that. It's just, we hear from very few of the Terranovans, actually, just two of them and maybe one who gives Reed some digger meat that isn't cooked. Mm. And it is unclear why they don't cook their food, but whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah, I don't know. Could have been. And then there's a weird scene where, I guess, so they're trying to suggest that despite the fact that the Terranovans live underground, they are not, and have mud on their faces, they are not savages, which I don't think you would automatically assume. But there's a scene where he shares his food with Reed, and then beautiful music fills the caves because the Terranovans aren't savages. They have beautiful music, and they can have art in even these dire circumstances. And I guess that's what we're supposed to learn, that they are actually, they haven't lost all of their humanity, Joe.
Mm.
They still have music.
Well, the skull ocarina is still kind of like a weird musical instrument.
Well, you know, yeah. You use what you can have, yeah. What you have. Yeah. I assume that's a digger skull.
Yeah, they were fresh out of Interlight flutes. But
that's right.
I didn't find it as emotionally affecting because I just didn't care about the poor people who were trapped underground. I also started thinking about things like, so if there's only 90 people that live under here, how is that a viable, like, genetically viable colony?
I thought they said at some point there's like only 58 of them.
Oh, maybe. I thought it was 90, but whatever. There's not that many people for generations.
No, they're not doing very well under trying circumstances, to be sure.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look great for them, which makes the rest of the episode almost interesting, but not quite. And I skipped over what, so I don't really like Reed as a character because he's another one of the, I shouldn't say I don't like him, but he's another one of these characters that didn't make a great impression upon me in that, and I mean that in a way of that I don't remember him existing as opposed to I dislike him. So I always forget his name, but he does have a nice moment where he tries to small talk with the Terranovan guard and says, hey, that's impressive body armor. And the Terranovan guard is not charmed by his compliments. And I just like that. But he does share his meat, so that's nice. And this is where we find out, oh no, the last transmission from the captain of the Conestoga, which was the name of the ship that landed, never got to Earth. And it is basically saying, why did you attack us? But he doesn't realize that it's an asteroid. And so this is where I guess this was supposed to be a big reveal, but it's kind of obvious that the Terranovans think that the humans did this, so we don't really need confirmation that they thought that. But what can you do?
Yeah, this, like you said, this reveal doesn't really work. And Archer's really disheartened by it, and doesn't know what to do. And he's upset that he can't make first contact with other humans. And he's just really wound up about it. And he takes T'Pol aside and it's like, we need solutions. And she's like, okay, well, throw down stun grenades and then just haul him up out of there. She's, I don't think, it's pretty clear from the stuff she says later, she didn't really mean to do that. She's just trying to get him to realize how right. silly it is to try and force them into another way of life to try to save them, because he would be destroying their way of life. Which is a good enough moment for T'Pol in this episode, which is not, you know, I think there are better episodes for T'Pol. But that was a nice thing for her to be able to confront him with that, to make him realize that his plan was silly. And he is still pretty upset, but then he agrees to go to he tries to get Dak down to the planet with the elders and try to use that opportunity to speak with the kids, so that he can impress upon them the urgency of the situation that they found themselves in, because he doesn't want them to die from this contamination that they have no way of detecting or knowing about. But he at least gets I forget his name, Eric Avari's character, and Nadette to agree to let him do that, because Nadette sees the photo of the colony and it triggers a memory for her of being a kid with her mother, which is fine, but I don't know.
Well, and so there's one thing I like about the Terranovans on the Enterprise, which is when Dr. Phlox puts her in the scanner tube, she freaks out, which I think makes sense because, I mean, she is used to living underground, but it's like a weird thing. But other than that, they seem rather blasé about being on a starship.
Yeah.
Which I think I would be freaking out, like if current Scott McNulty was thrust into the future and I ended up on the Enterprise. I think I'd be freaking out a little bit more than these Terranovans. They don't seem to mind. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're just cool customers. But I did like the kind of the so we find out they're contaminated and Archer's like, we need to move them to Earth. We need to bring them back to Earth because, you know, that's what we do. They're humans. We can't leave them here to die. And then, as you said, T'Pol is like, all right, well, we'll just stun them and take them and put them on Earth. And Archer's like, we can't do that. And then she's like, well, you just want to, what are they going to do on Earth? And he said, well, they'll adapt. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And she's like, are you sure? Like, what are they going to do? Just lose their entire culture? And he's like, yeah, their culture is dumb. They're humans. It'll be fine.
It's a very Kirk-like
kind of true.
Logic.
And I know I do think that it's probably better to live on Earth than live in tunnels eating diggers. Mm-hmm. But that's really their choice. I think they need to have that choice. And we find out that Archer's like, well, why don't they just live on the surface? And T'Pol is like, well, it's still about 10 years until they can live on the surface safely, because there's low levels of radiation. But if you hang out for a long time, bad stuff happens. But it's a whole planet. And there's a whole big continent that's fine and has similar enough caves. I did think it was funny, though, when they're like, well, we haven't really scanned the cave, so we don't know what's in them, but we assume it's fine.
Yeah.
Come on, people. You're not giving a good sell here.
And Archer's like, well, when you scan the caves, it wouldn't hurt if they have, what do they call them? Diggers. And it's like, that's like the most memorable name that you could have for these like armadillo creatures. They dig. That's all they do. It's not like it was like some weird alien word for it. They're just, they dig.
And they say digger a lot.
Oh, so much.
So he would not have forgotten it. But it is no good. So yes, then they get back in the shuttle pod and they're like, let's go. We'll bring Nadette and Jamin, I think is his name,
all right,
down, and they will hopefully, he's not so sold on it, but after Nadette sees the picture, it is unclear to us if she's sold on to it or not, because she doesn't admit that it's her. She just says, you think that's me? But we find out later that she remembers that it's her, and it's all fine, in case you're worried about the Terranovans. But they land the shuttle pod, and oh no, remember how we said there's some geological instability? Or instability. Instability is not a word. They land the shuttle pod, and oh, it crashes through the surface, and they fall 8 meters, which is, I will say, well within transporter range, but they don't transport out for some reason.
No.
I don't know why. Now, I know in the early seasons of Enterprise, they don't really trust the transporter, but I feel like in this situation, when it feels like they're all about to die, you might want to transport out just in case, but yeah. They don't.
Well, and I think other episodes do a good job of showing why you don't always want to resort to the transporter in this early iteration. Like there's one with a storm and this lady tries to beam up or down in it and then she gets twigs all stuck in her face. So you kind of get that. But here it's just like
bad things.
They're just like, it would be inconvenient, or whatever. And they're just like, so Trip's going to work on something to get the shuttle pod back out of the cave.
Get a rig, yes, because yeah. It falls 8 meters, but then it collapses even more, and it falls down, and then Jimin's like, open the door, and Archer's like, we're not going to open the door. But then he says to Trip, can we open the door? And Trip's like, yeah, you can open the door. And it's like, okay, well, open the door.
It's pretty anticlimactic.
It is very much. I don't even understand why that scene is there. But they get out and he's like, oh, I know where we are. Give me your phaser rifle or your pistol, whatever he says. And Archer's like, why? And it is unclear to me why he needs it, but he gives it to him. And off they go to find out. Oh, go back to where the Terranovans are. Archer says, did you hear that? Oh, it's someone screaming. So they go and find him. And it's some Terranovan has fallen in a hole and is stuck under a giant tree trunk. But it's way deep. And so they need to work together, Joe, and build the trust. They need to trust one another in order to get down there and save this person. So Archer's like, I will totally do it. And Jimin and he climb down there, try to lift up this trunk. And when I think there's a phaser pistol, why don't you just cut it in half? And that's what Archer does after saying, give me my phaser back. And Jimin's like, why? And then he cuts it in half. And everyone's like, OMG, I did not realize you could do that, even though they totally saw what the phasers could do earlier in the episode. I don't understand why he was so surprised, but whatever. Yeah. And they saved the guy. It's very strange.
The whole thing is really ham-fisted in order to try to build trust quickly between them. I don't think that this is done very well at all. And I could tell from the way you're reciting that, you may not be 100% on board with it either.
I think, I think it was a good idea that is poorly executed and just kind of rushed. Like, there's a whole lot of nothing in this episode, and then they just rush through what could be good scenes. I don't know where the writers thought the good parts were, but I do not agree with them.
No.
Because I feel like there's a lot that could have been done here. And I think that this would have been more interesting if it was mostly just, let's just jump to, okay, we found these people. Like, Captain Slog, we're in orbit around Terra Nova. We found these colonists that we thought were wiped out living underground, and now we have to try and help them and gain their trust, right? There's your teaser. Just get right to it, because that's the interesting thing. Nobody cares about the mystery that you immediately solve, only your characters don't understand it's solved, and we think they're dumb. And then they solve it. Like, it's just annoying. Anyway. And this is when we find out they get back to the Terranovan headquarters. And Nadette is like, hey, Jimin, tell the youngsters the offer. And he's like, what do you mean? And Nadette says, oh, that was my mother. We are humans. And they are humans. And humans help humans. And let's listen to them. And so they do. And I don't think they actually show them accepting the relocation plan, because the next scene, unless I just ignored a part, is everybody again around that tiny little table talking about how great it was they solved the mystery of Terra Nova. Now, I would assume they aren't just leaving them there to die, but they don't say that.
No, and that scene is really rushed, and now at the tiny table, they've squeezed in Mayweather. so that yes. he can do all of his golly gee shucks about the missing colony stuff. And I found this very unsatisfying because like you said, I felt like I had missed something. Whereas like after all that buildup of like, will they move? Will they agree? What will they do? And it's just like, and then everyone was fine, we guess, maybe. And what a story. I get to write the mission report. Okay.
And I feel like once again, as you said at the very beginning of this episode, it's oddly paced, and I feel like they could have, and this is if they did what I'm not a TV writer, so I do not have the skills to write any episode of television, but I would expect that maybe some of the younger Terranovans, having found out that they are humans and seeing the life that the Enterprise crew seemingly leads, might want to go back to Earth.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that might be interesting.
The younger Terranovans didn't get to see that, only the old people. And they're going to take it with them to their graves because they don't want all the young people to leave.
It's like, no, you 60 people need to stay underground with us and keep our precious Terranovan culture active. Yeah. I don't know. It just seems weird. And then they skip over. And I think the resolution would have been very interesting, but we don't see it. It could have even just been a little scene where they're, you know, moving in stuff into new caves and Phlox says, you know, here's a little kit to make sure the water's not contaminated or whatever. But nope, it's just that let's gather around our tiny table and talk about the awesome report that Mayweather gets to do as his reward for solving this mystery. He gets to finish the paperwork for us.
Yeah.
The end. And I think that that the ending of this episode may be my least favorite thing about this episode because it just is so abrupt and dumb.
Yeah, abrupt is really the way to describe it. But it's also like abrupt in a very slow way too, because they're just sitting around a table talking about it.
Yeah, it's not like the end. They're done. We solved that, Captain. Freeze frame.
Yeah. The freeze frame would really jazz this up, I think.
That's true. Or like, you know, there's a we solved that, and then there's a digger on the captain's chair, and some Hoshi goes, uh-oh, freeze frame.
That would have been good. Or Phlox had a digger escape from the medical lab, because he has this little menagerie of little animals. That would have been something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that.
Digger and Porthos being friends. They could hang out together. Yeah.
See, there you go. That's the spinoff I want. Mm-hmm. Star Trek, Porthos and Digger. It could be animated. I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe like, you know, 10-minute episodes, put it on YouTube. It'll be fine. Yeah, maybe claymation.
You don't want the like latex rear end of a armadillo to be shaking around in the flashlight.
They wisely didn't show us a lot of the diggers.
Right. Yes.
So I think that was they are spoken about more than they are seen. And I think that was a good decision.
Yeah.
So, Joe, overall, what did you think of this episode of Terra Nova?
Not great. I didn't. It is, unfortunately, I think, in one of the categories that is my least favorite of kind of mediocre but poorly executed stuff that is unfortunately not as memorable for being bad as some bad episodes are. But it isn't good. So there's no real reason for anyone to return or dwell on this. And as far as I know, no one ever mentioned Terra Nova ever again.
I don't think so. And I think that the worst thing about it is, cause it's fine. It's not, it's like unoffensive, whatever. But it is so early in the first season of, Enterprise. And so, that's not great when you're pulling a Terra Nova in your first half of your first season. Because it's just kind of boring, and kind of feels like a retread of, or an amalgamation of a bunch of other Star Trek episodes, which, you know, I understand Brendan Braga and Rick Berman were maybe a little burnt out at this point and maybe they didn't realize it.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to let go. Like I have no doubt that both of them have great affection and love for Star Trek, but sometimes you need to let other people play with the toys. And I think that that's what we found out in Enterprise.
Yeah, especially because when you get to, like we said earlier, that latter season, the like Manny Koto season, it's just like much better because someone else is doing it.
And someone isn't. Because they have good, I mean, I'm not Rick Berman, and I know there are people who have strong opinions about both of them, but I think they've done excellent work and some less than excellent work. And Enterprise, I don't think reflects that. I will say, I think Enterprise as a concept was a really good idea. And there are some very good episodes of Enterprise, but overall, kind of disappointing.
Yeah. And I think it's really the character stuff that is a bummer because I know as much as we, when we've done some of our sessions on The Incomparable about Discovery, we might have been like, oh, nobody really talks to the rest of the Bridge crew. Like, we'd like to see more of them. Kind of here, we have people talk to the Bridge crew, but they just say like one line and then they like wander off. It doesn't feel like they're really developed. I never really felt like, unfortunately, Travis Mayweather felt really underdeveloped. And like you said, Malcolm Reed, they finally do something with him later. I don't know if you've, when you get to it in your rewatch at some point, now that you've gotten past your Terra Nova slump.
Well, I'll have to watch it again with Marisa because she didn't finish it. So.
Oh, no. Just tell her it's fine.
It's fine. The Terra Novans are safe by the end.
Yeah. Everybody's happy. The end.
As many missed opportunities. And Hoshi is translates things and gets scared mostly. So unfortunate. But I am not scared by you, Joe. That's a great segue. Thank you for joining me to talk about Star Trek of any kind. A conversation with you is always fun. That's like a Yoda speak there. I don't know what I was trying to say, but I enjoy talking about Star Trek with you is what I meant to say.
Enjoying with you.
Universal translator.
Yeah, Star Trek, yes.
See, this episode could have used a baby Yoda. Oh. That would solve everything.
Yeah. Well, we're a baby version of whatever that alien was in Star Trek 3 that talks backwards. Oh, yeah. You should get one of those.